Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're going to talk now about ways to and ways not to convince people who haven't yet decided to get the COVID vaccine to get them. As you might have heard in President Biden's speeches and various appearances over the last week, he has set a goal to fully vaccinate 160 million U.S. adults by the 4th of July. This is partly new yesterday. He said his goal now is to get at least one vaccine dose into 70% of the nation's adult population by that time. That would be really good. 70% is what a lot of the experts say is needed for herd immunity, where there just aren't enough people for the virus to keep getting passed around, that it starts to die out, and very importantly as well, doesn't have the opportunity to mutate very much and develop vaccine-resistant variants. So 70%, that's a very ambitious goal by the 4th of July. And Biden's outreach plan prioritizes pop-up and mobile vaccine sites, as well as walk-in appointments at places like pharmacies. Federal dollars will go to support local outreach efforts to create more trust in the vaccine, focusing on low-income communities and rural parts of the country where uptake rates are relatively low. But it's possible that in that big televised address to the nation last week on day 99, that Biden gave his message in exactly the wrong way. Here's what he said.
Go get vaccinated, America. Go and get the vaccination. They're available.
So, I don't know, maybe he was kind of barking and lecturing at people in a way that isn't really going to go get vaccinated. I hope it works because I'm definitely on his side on this, but, I don't know. By contrast, the Washington Post had a piece this week on vaccine skeptics who did change their minds. The article referenced a segment we had on this show. I'm not taking credit for this. This just happened to happen here. Last month, we were discussing long COVID. It wasn't even about vaccine hesitancy or reluctance or whatever you want to call it. It was about long COVID and the people who are suffering from that. But the Washington Post article mentions a former vaccine skeptic named Anderson, who was a listener and turned out to be part of a vaccine focus group, who detailed what changed his mind. And here's what the Post says. Two folks who were long-haul symptom holders of COVID-19, got on the show and said as soon as they got the shot, the symptoms faded away. And that's true. We got those callers. I was surprised to hear it, that the vaccine could have been associated with long-haul COVID symptoms disappearing. They never made that claim at Moderna or Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, AstraZeneca. But the listener, Anderson, says, that's when I was convinced to go take my shot. And that was in the Washington Post. Other things in that story that the Post said convinced people, getting vaccinated opens up travel, return to work, general return to pre-pandemic life. One person mentions wanting to attend a New York Yankees game. Funny enough, Governor Cuomo just yesterday announced that there are going to be different sections in Yankee Stadium and Citi Field starting later this month for people who are vaccinated and people who aren't vaccinated. That's very interesting. Also, people mentioned trusting healthcare workers, especially local pharmacists, and people who are caregivers want to stay healthy for their loved ones, as well as being part of something bigger than yourself. So really interesting stuff in that Washington Post article. And we are happy to have back with us a guest who's been coming on every week for a number of weeks now, who has really made this her specialty, convincing the unconvinced to get vaccines and helping to provide access to people who might want them, but there have been barriers. And that is S. Mitra Kalita, co-founder of URL Media and CEO and publisher of Epicenter NYC, As I say, she's done a lot of outreach work and wants to see less judgment in similar efforts. So hi, Mitra. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. It's great to be back with you.
Isn't that a great story from the show?
It was.
Like I say, I'm not trying to take credit for this. We weren't even doing a convince you to take vaccine segment. It just turned out that way from someone's genuine story.
Yeah, I think those stories are really what resonate with people. So we'll get there. But the more stories people can share like that one, I think the better. And those, you know, they're just so personal and they really work. I promise they work.
And I don't want to dump on Biden very much, who's really trying everything he can do. But I don't know. I was a little taken aback when I went, get vaccinated, get vaccinated. Yeah. Like, that's not going to do it.
So I'm feeling good towards Biden this week for what you just mentioned, which is he's focusing on walk-in appointments at pharmacies. He's moving to smaller mobile sites and really getting in the community. So I'm going to give him a pass on the language because I think the actions that the federal government is finally taking are in line with what communities need. That being said, Brian, you're absolutely right. And I think that it's coming from a politician is something else for us to be wary of, because what I've noticed for much of even not just in the more recent vaccine debates, but just over the last year and how we talk about COVID, I think we kind of took the rhetoric from the Trump years and how polarized the country is. And you cited a Washington Post story, but I mean, you've read all the stories about how to talk to your relatives at the Thanksgiving dinner table if you disagree with them. And and so I worry that we are taking that approach to convincing people to get their vaccine. And, you know, whether you vote Republican or Democrat is a very different discussion at the dinner table than your decision to get a vaccine or not. And some of what you're describing, I think, is exactly how it's landing, which is a politician is telling me to do something. I don't agree with them. And it just sort of falls on deaf ears.
I see, for example, that you don't even like the term that the media so commonly uses, and I do too, included in that, vaccine hesitancy. And I've avoided it in the intro until this point because I want to learn from you. What's wrong with vaccine hesitancy?
So I think vaccine hesitancy, it basically assigns a negativity to the end user who we're trying to convince to get the vaccine. And I don't think we've solved for vaccine access. And we're kind of almost leapfrogging, if you will, to a place of saying people are vaccine hesitant, meaning they are skeptical or they don't want the vaccine before we've solved for all the factors that might be preventing them from getting it. So what do I mean by that? And Brian, you and I have talked almost every week about outreach and information.
Right.
And yet again, we're going to talk about outreach and information because I think we still have a population that is not on Twitter, not on Facebook, not watching Biden's speech before Congress, not seeing commercials. I got to say, like, I don't think the government is spending enough on media. And that's a plug for you and me, right? Like, I think that we need to see way more outreach so that vaccines and how you get them are ubiquitous. And I worry that we talk about vaccine hesitancy before we've even tried really hard to make sure people know, you know, here's the information on getting a vaccine. Here's where you can get it. Here's why you should get it. Do you want to go to a Yankee game? Do you want a $10 gift card? Do you want to work? I mean, so many employers are now kind of saying they prefer that you're vaccinated. So I don't think we've messaged that area, which is really critical and exactly what you just outlined in the Washington Post and how you can convince people to do this. And unfortunately, the narrative has become people don't want the vaccine, which has turned it political. Yes, there are people who don't want the vaccine, but I am not convinced we have done everything in our power to spread the good word on vaccines. And my hope is we can get to that 70% with kind of a more dual track of convincing people and, you know, a bit more of mm-hmm. the debunking and so forth.
So do you have an alternative shorthand for people in the media to use other than vaccine hesitancy?
Oh, I mean, I think vaccine access. I also just think if every time we write about vaccine hesitancy, I would love if media would, you know, actually the government just released a series of links this week in order for you to get your vaccine. There's a phone number you can text, and it, if you give them your zip code, it will spit out the nearest vaccine sites near you. So again, I have some good news off of Joe Biden. So let's not dump on him too much this week. He really is trying to give you the tools to get the vaccine closest to you. And I think to the extent that the media is covering this and does stories about why people don't want to, and, you know, they prefer Pfizer, and like, there's so many kind of takes out there. You know, nothing stops us from putting in a box or some links with that story to how to get this.
And yet, haven't we, at least to some degree, passed that point? I realize access is still an issue for a lot of people, but I don't know if it's right to say this is primarily a matter of access at this point, based on the reporting that I've been seeing. Even in New York City, we might have talked about this last week briefly, half of New York City firefighters who had access from the beginning, and other frontline healthcare workers who've, here, this is coming to your workplace, you're the first people, nobody else can get it yet, we're giving it to you. Half the firefighters in New York City have declined the vaccine, and half the people in some of the hospitals in New York City. I was watching a report from a county in Colorado the other day where they have the capacity to give out 1,500 shots per day at their local facility, and they used to be oversubscribed. Now only 1,000 people a day are showing up. They're having 500 extra doses every day and figuring out what to do. Yep. And that's, you know, and that's typical. So there is something there that's not just access, right?
That's fair. Brian, I think that's a point well taken. It's that we dwell on that population at the risk of getting us to the potentially getting us to the 70%. And I think it's possible to do both. The other thing with the group of firefighters that you're mentioning is that it does take some people time to get used to what this even represents. And I think the more, you know, the firefighters might be at 50%, but as they see people who have gotten their vaccine, are fine, are sharing stories like the one you've said, maybe they go to church and the church, you know, has them on site, and it becomes socially unacceptable to not have your vaccine, right? And so I think we want to try to create those situations for people in multiple ways. And then, you know, public employment, to what you were saying earlier and what I just mentioned, of how do we make it untenable to come to work and not be vaccinated when you're as public facing as a firefighter? And that's an uncomfortable conversation. It gets a little bit into the judgment, but I think we're there.
So listeners, let's take a few phone calls. If you have a story of what Mitra is calling a sort of non-judgmental way to get somebody, and this can happen one person at a time. It's not just from, you know, the president or people who host talk shows or anything like that. So centrally happens one person at a time. So it can be a single person story. Any personal experience about non-judgmental experiences that wound up helping somebody decide to get vaccinated? And Matthew in Hoboken might have one. Matthew, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Good morning, Mitra. How are you doing today?
Hi, Matthew.
So I actually have a very interesting story. So I was on my way in a Lyft to get my second vaccine. And about halfway through the ride, my Lyft driver asked me if I was going to the vaccination site. And we got to talking, and he told me he was very hesitant to get it because he heard his friends had gotten pretty bad symptoms after their first shot. But his family is from the Dominican Republic, and he was hoping to go back there soon. So we got to talking, and after about 10 minutes of me kind of putting my lawyer persuasion pants on, I actually convinced him to get his walk-in first vaccine. So my Lyft driver and I went into the vaccination site. We got our shots together. We sat for our 15 minutes afterwards and talked and kind of got to know each other. And he actually drove me home. So that was a pretty cool story in a great way to get someone vaccinated. And a pretty funny story nonetheless. So.
And a great story, Matthew. Thank you very much. Let's go to another one. This is about access, actually. Joe in Far Rockaway, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe. Thanks for calling in.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that in the Rockaways, well, Gossam has just had a story about how the east side of the Rockaways has a very low vaccination rate compared to the west side, but in Breezy Point, and which is much more, which is richer. But there's just a real lack of medical care in the Rockaways. It's a desert, and we lost Peninsula Hospital, and there's just a small St. John's in the east. And I'm just wondering whether just lack of, I got vaccinated in mainland Queens, up in York University, and my ex-wife, I arranged for my ex-wife also to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. We had to drive 25 minutes to get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I just think that some places may be, medical deserts kind of. And
yeah. Joe, thank you. Mitra Medical Deserts, yes, right?
Yes, yes, very much so. And the Rockaways is one area that we've been mentioning for weeks now. So if the caller could give the producers your number and information, we're happy to help. There's two ways. One is to use that system that I just talked about, which tells you the nearest pharmacy or site that you can get vaccinated. And then the other is there's a number of doctors and healthcare organizations that are trying to assist not just the homebound population, but people who, are in harder to reach areas. And they're doing this certainly across rural America, but here in New York City, areas like the one the caller is talking about would qualify. So we have connected with some of those folks and can connect the caller. It's worth noting that a lot of doctors are in this predicament where they have doses. They have Moderna or Pfizer, for example, and they will call and say, our patients have mostly taken it. We would not mind making good old-fashioned house calls to places that might need it and are not getting access. And so that's another trend that we've been seeing over the last week or so from doctors wanting to do exactly the type of work the caller mentions.
A few more minutes with S. Mitra Kalita, co-founder of URL Media and CEO and publisher of Epicenter NYC, who's done a lot to match people and vaccines and been coming on with us every week for, 5-6 weeks now to talk about the various aspects of this and help the effort. Tweet, by the way, from listener Sumia, who writes, every time Mitra Kalita is on, Brian Lehrer is a good segment. So I will
vouch
for
that. That's very kind
of
me. I don't know Mia, so I'm grateful for that.
Matt in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matt.
Hey, I'm just having conversations with neighbors and friends, and people seem to have concerns about extra long-term, maybe more subtle side effects that, deal with your biological systems in subtle ways that, and it's just hard to find any information that really speaks to that directly.
Mitra?
Yeah, that's right. So this is actually, there is another group of vaccine hesitancy, Brian, where I'm fine if you use the word, which is on the second dose. And we're hearing increasingly from people because of the fear of side effects and the unknown side effects, people just don't want to get their second dose. And we're hearing this increasingly. So I think one, there's a reason that we're kind of increasingly partnering with doctors. I am not a doctor. I never worked in public health. I didn't even cover health until this, this most recent kind of foray into vaccines. And so what we do with folks who call us or email for help in that area is that we do have doctors we connect them to. Your primary care doctor is always going to be the best line of defense on this. I do think the one downside of sharing the stories is that people think one person's side effects are definitely going to be theirs. And so they say, well, I can't deal with, chills or being down for 2 days or. And people just immediately think someone else's experience will be mine. So another part of the messaging, which you're increasingly seeing on Twitter, but again, most of America is not living or getting their information on Twitter, are people saying, I got both vaccines, I had no side effects, I'm absolutely fine. But I do think the extent that we can, share that as the normal stories would also help some of what's being described in the hesitancy around that, especially with the second dose.
I got both shots. I got a little tired. I was fine.
Yeah, I was fine. I, for what it's worth, I got a little sore in the arm, but I almost worried it didn't work because everyone was talking about their side effects and I didn't really have them.
Right. And sore in the arm too. Yeah. But I don't even count that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Matthew on Long Island. You're on WNYC with Mitra Kalita. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. Good morning, Brian. I just wanted to mention, the other day I was chatting with a friend of mine in East Elmhurst, in Astoria, that area. And she, over the weekend, got her second dose. And she's a primarily a Spanish-speaking, Spanish is her first language. And she went in, and besides the fact she said there was really no one there, more importantly, said there was really no one there who spoke Spanish.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, and you know, if she had any questions. So I'm wondering if, I mean, it was just kind of ironic, being that East Elmhurst was the, talking about epicenter, was the epicenter for here in New York. So I'm wondering if there was, you know, what resources are going towards informing people about the vaccine in different languages. I mean, obviously Spanish is hugely important here in New York, but there's, you know, dozens of other languages spoken in Queens alone. So I'm wondering what resources are being put out to reach people in different populations.
Brian, that's a great, great point. I think one of the reasons Epicenter has been successful with our efforts is because we had committees in the native languages of our community. And so we had a Chinese language committee, we had Spanish, of course, we had Bangla, and so forth. And so that sort of worked wonders in terms of access issues, as Matthew is outlining. But remember, language is not just information for the end user, it's actually the connection, right? It's, and so by speaking the same language, people also will ask questions about, you know, what are the side effects and when do I have to get my second shot? And suddenly a whole world that might not have opened up if it's a, you know, a government facility that has no Spanish speakers, like it's just a very different conversation. So thankfully, I think the both federal and actually state and city, all three have caught on to this. And increasingly, we're not just seeing translators on sites, but at the mobile vaccine unit that was in Jackson Heights last week, there was actually a list of all of the languages that they have people who speak on site. So I think that's another way to increase access. I'll just tell you one little anecdote. Epicenter was tabling in Jackson Heights about 10 days ago, and we hired a Nepali-Tibetan translator. And we thought we were just hiring a translator to kind of, you know, help folks in a very high traffic area get booked for vaccines or get information on vaccines. She turned out to be a pretty prominent Facebook and Instagram influencer. And so she started going live from our table, encouraging those communities, the Tibetan and Nepali communities, to come. She kept saying, come, get your vaccines. I'm here all day. And so it took a while, but after about an hour, we started getting dozens of people from the Nepali and Tibetan communities coming by the table. They said hi to her. They got booked for vaccines. They got information on it. And, you know, we've been working in the community, but for me, that was just a lesson. And we haven't even scratched the surface of who that community includes. Mm-hmm. I do think that's where the government needs to start moving into those pockets of influence and language as well.
That's a great story. Last question. I'm just curious what you think of Cuomo's announcement yesterday about the ballparks. Like, I'm trying to figure out if this is carrot or stick or both, or this is judgmental in a way that's going to turn people off and cause a lot of backlash, or if this is really going to help. And for people who haven't heard this, starting one day later this month, I think it's the 19th, but don't quote me, they're going to be able to go to full capacity at Yankee Stadium and Citi Field in theory. But for people who are vaccinated, there's not going to be a capacity limit in their sections, right? They're going to be able to, they're going to designate parts of the stadiums, apparently, where vaccinated people can sit in full capacity sections. For people who aren't vaccinated, A, they will offer the vaccine at the ballpark and give them a free ticket to a future game.
Yeah.
But when they go inside, they'll have to sit in a separate section with social distancing so that they're not vaccinated. because they're not vaccinated, and so they don't so easily spread it. So I don't know what is that, Nietzsche, you know? Is that a stigmatization of those people that's going to cause taunting? It is an athletic event after all.
Right.
Is that good carrot? You know what I mean?
I totally do. And I have the same feeling, Brian, of I didn't really know how to feel about it. I think it's a social experiment. My hope is it incentivizes the non-vaccinated to come along, right? So maybe we need to combine the firefighter population that you mentioned and say, look, you could sit in these sections. So I think it is an effort. I applaud creative thinking right now, so I can't really knock it yet. I think it is also a version of what we're already seeing in our social circles. What do I mean by that? Like, we have started to kind of tiptoe into seeing families who we haven't seen for the last year. You know, we have a little yard and we keep the door open if they come inside, but we've definitely started to, you know, socialize in smaller groups. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we are asking people if they're vaccinated. If they're not vaccinated, we're not socializing with them. And so I think there already is going to be a natural parting of sections of socializing in our country. My hope is that it's not as political and polarized as the last few years. That might sound very naive, but I really hope that's not what's going to define us as it did for the last few years. And so I think Andrew Cuomo is just kind of putting a stake in mm-hmm. a game and saying, well, this is kind of how it's playing out anyway in families. Let's see if public facilities can mirror that and incentivize the population that's not vaccinated to go join, hopefully, the more crowded sections.
My producer just said in my ear, she can imagine a chant springing up at the ballpark from the dense section. Get your shot. Get your shot. I'm going to extend this by one call because Max in Borum Hill has such a great question. Max, real quick, with Mitra.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My wife and I got married on Zoom in August, and we are finally going to be having our party a year later. And we're crafting an email to try and get people, and we want all of our guests to be vaccinated so we can have a big maskless, wonderful dance party. But we're trying to figure out the words to use so that we don't say, like, you can't come if you're not vaccinated, but instead encourage our potential guests to get vaccinated. So, yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
Any suggestions, Mitra?
Well, I think I just crafted an email like this myself for something Epicenter's hosting. And the language I used was, please confirm that you will be at least 2 weeks from your second dose or first dose in the case of J&J. If you attend, there will be temperature checks. And, you know, I laid it on pretty thick because this is not just about you know, your comfort, but really the comfort of everybody else, which it just takes two unvaccinated people and it's a different dynamic. And so I was pretty explicit in the email I just crafted, although I assure you, Max, it took me, more than it usually takes me to write such an email. So I think being honest, explicit, and also telling them, in the case of like temperature checks, which I'm surprised, initially I was surprised are still a thing, but actually provide an additional layer of safety and comfort to your guests. And that's, I mean, you want to have a great day and let's remove all of the barriers that that it would take for that. So, and congratulations to you. That's great.
Max, thank you. I hope that's helpful. S. Mitra Kalita, the always helpful co-founder of URL Media and CEO and publisher of Epicenter NYC, who's done so much vaccine outreach. Thank you so much again.
Thanks, Brian. It was great to be with you.